I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Dan Taberke and Steve Pendery. You're both representing Triad, which is the economic development arm of the three counties in Northern Kentucky. And Dan, you're the executive director, and Steve, you're on the executive committee, as serving on that in your role as a judge executive. You've got something to celebrate this year, don't you? It's your 25th year of existence.
25th anniversary, and time to take stock. 44,000 jobs. Those are primary jobs as we define them, meaning that there are spinoff jobs that when you add to the original total brings the overall total to almost 110,000. $24 billion worth of economic impact, $6.3 billion in direct investment, but the overall impact, $24 billion, and 200 international companies have located in Northern Kentucky, in part as a result of Triad's activity.
How did Triad get formed and why did it come about?
From my understanding is that the leaders in Northern Kentucky at that time, and most importantly, Bill Robinson at the time, was one key factor. He was the chair of the Northern Kentucky Chamber, and he saw the need for a three-county regional organization. He helped put it together with six different total co-founders. We put it together with the three judge executives at that time and three private sector members, and it's blossomed into a regional, team-oriented, collaborative effort for Northern Kentucky.
And I assume one of the keys is that the three counties are not fighting each other for new business. They're collaborating, and collectively they've managed to attract a lot of new business in that period of time.
It really wouldn't work any other way. You have 36, say, cities and three counties, and you have to be mature and well-adjusted and understand that a job is important to a person, whether it's across your jurisdictional line or not. A lot of people in Campbell County work in Boone County, where the greatest portion of the growth is gone. So we're all in it together, and we have a better standard of living and quality of life as a result.
We also have another state right across the river, and I guess I'm just curious, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the fact that we, as a region, really are two states?
It helps keep us sharp. Our competition, it is a different state. It is a different way of doing business in some respects, different tax climates, for example. It keeps us sharp. It keeps us aggressive. But we don't actively seek companies out of the Cincinnati region at all. If they do knock on our door in Northern Kentucky, we do respond to them. And more times than not, it turns into a real estate deal. They need to have a single floor building in which to do their industrial activities in, instead of maybe a three or four story building, for example.
How do you deal with that? How do you really not allow that to happen in terms of being fiduciarily responsible of tax dollars?
You try to avoid it. That kind of churning is an unproductive use of everybody's tax resources. And as Dan pointed out, we'll talk to somebody who comes to see us, but we're not actively soliciting companies in Cincinnati just so they can move across the river. We're out there in the rest of the world trying
sure.
to bring as far-flung entities as foreign companies are and businesses from other states.
If people would like to get in touch with you or learn more about Triad, what's the contact information?
Best way to do it is go to the website, northernkentuckyusa.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Dan Taberke and Steve Pendery. And these gentlemen are representing Triad, which stands for Northern Kentucky Tri-County Economic Development Corporation. And this is your 25th anniversary. Congratulations. You know, for somebody who was not born and raised here, I moved here about 20-some years ago. I've just watched this side of the river just grow and expand. It's just fabulous. And a lot of it has to do with the Triad Initiative.
Fidelity Investments, for example, Toyota, for example, two great prime types of companies that we'd like to see in Northern Kentucky. And we've had a hand in each one of those. We also want to make sure that all of our existing businesses that are here have a chance to grow and expand. And we've got a new program that we're launching in our 25th year. It's called Northern Kentucky Boost. And it's essentially to enhance the business climate and the way that these existing companies can feel attention, that the local governments can have a way to work with them, and to make sure that they stay here and grow here.
Well, you know, you hear that often. We represent many entrepreneurs and privately held businesses who've been here for generations. And a common complaint is, why is it that all this money and attention is going to bring in these new companies? What about us? Mm-hmm. You know, those of us that's been here for years and years and years. And so this sounds like it's a mechanism and an effort to help those companies.
Right. We want to know if there's a traffic light problem, an issue with bus service, or any issue that's affecting their business productivity, we want to know about it and see if we can maybe go to fellows like Judge Executive Steve mm-hmm. Pendry here and say, here's some problems that we're seeing. Can you help out?
And Steve will be glad to, because over 80% of the job growth in Northern Kentucky mm-hmm. currently is out of the growth of existing business.
Well, that's a pretty impressive statistic. So it makes a lot of sense to focus on those businesses and to make things as easy as possible for them without, you know, harming any public safety or anything.
Triad is actually partnering with organizations like Northern Kentucky University to help develop the skill set that's necessary for these companies to grow.
And that we're not just paying lip service to that when we say that there's a partnership with that as its goal. There was a study done that Northern Kentucky University participated with us in by a consultant from Texas, Angelou Economics. We selected targeted industries, decided which diplomas and educational programs would best support those industries, and created targets in those areas, not only for ourselves in terms of prospects, but for the universities in the area, Northern Kentucky University at the top of the list, but also Gateway, to try to produce the trained people in the areas we need.
And part of what came out of that was the NKU College of Informatics. The, the whole term informatics came out of that study. And it's blossomed into a great feature for us here in Northern Kentucky to expand upon here.
The whole concept of this informatics program, from what I understand, their graduation job placement is like 98%.
Right.
So to
Very
the extent
good.
That we can actually help businesses here in our community with the types of workers having the skills that they need, I mean, it's a wonderful thing.
Oh, things like big data, cybersecurity, working on mainframes. I mean, they're learning to hear at NKU. It's a great feature for us to market in Northern Kentucky, not only to our existing businesses, but those that are outside the region as well.
Well, and some of those students will ultimately start their own businesses, I expect.
Sure, sure. And one way to start new businesses, we got another program called UpTech, where we are bringing the resources of the community together, using NKU as a launch pad, and trying to come up with a way to accelerate these companies. They're housed right now in Campbell County's One Riverfront Place, and we look to see 8 of those companies succeed, hopefully.
Folks would like to learn more about Triad. The website is
www.northerncontuckyusa.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Well, Tom, I've just pulled out my shopping list for the holidays, and it always brings to mind that this is certainly a topic that many people need to really think about before they do set off to the malls or go online to start shopping.
And that topic is using credit wisely, if at all.
Absolutely. Because the problem is, it's so easy to use credit. And you don't want to be in a situation where you just buy that one more thing or spend that extra $50 just because you can charge it.
Well, and if you're one of the many people who don't know what you charged on your credit card until the bill comes, you're not a very good financial planner. You need to think about how you're going to pay that bill as you're making the charges. Keep track of what you're spending and plan ahead and budget how much you're going to spend and charge on the credit card, if you're going to charge anything on the credit card.
The key is you have to only spend the amount that you can pay off when the bill comes next month, because otherwise you're spending way more than what you had originally planned because of the high interest charges.
Well, the other thing you have to guard against with credit cards this time of year, especially whenever you go into stores, there's always deals to open up a new account. You get a discount for that day's purchases or whatever.
Doing that could actually harm your credit score. So certainly be just very careful when you make a decision to open a charge card in a department store, because it will have an impact on your credit score.
And of course, your credit score matters, because that affects how much interest might get charged on your credit card. It affects maybe your ability to refinance your house at a very good rate if you're in the mode of doing that. It may affect your ability to get additional credit.
And there is a strategy around credit. There are ways that you can use credit to actually improve your credit score. The key is that you just have to be knowledgeable about the impact and where you stand in terms of your overall credit. One other point I want to make out, Tom, is impulse buying. avoid that. Go home, think about it, and if you still think it makes sense to buy that item the next day or in 2 days, then go back and buy it. But whatever you do, try to avoid impulse buying, because that accounts for a large percentage of overspending for most people.
I hate to use the word budget in everything we do, but really for all of your holiday spending, you should have a budget, and you should really try to stick to that on an individual by individual basis.
You'll feel much happier if you stick to your budget, minimize your credit card spending to what you can pay to over off in the next month when the bills come in the mail. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, we recently wrote a column in the Inquirer in response to a question from one of our listeners who had a question concerning how he was going to end up paying more taxes on his small business income because of the change in the tax law, particularly with regard to the Medicare tax that goes up as a result of health care reform, and really looking at higher tax rates and how, even though his total income was more than $250,000, he wasn't really getting that money out of his business. And so he didn't feel rich, but he's being taxed as if he's rich.
I know, Tom, that is such a common complaint that we hear all the time. And it really makes you question whether our elected officials get that, because so many small businesses are taxed as pass-through entities, LLCs, S-corporations, partnerships. And under the definition of wealthy, the president thinks that when you have $250,000 of adjusted gross income, that would constitute you being wealthy. But as you mentioned, many small businesses have their business income passed through, taxed on their individual return, which causes their overall income to be over the threshold of $250,000.
It is even going to be perhaps more unfair. You know, we're talking about legislatively reducing the corporate tax rate. You know, right now it's a 35% rate, which is one of the highest rates in the world for corporations, but they're talking about ratcheting that down to some lower number. We've heard 28 or 25% as a part of an overall tax reform, but that's for the big corporations.
The biggest of corporations.
Right, the General Electrics, the Procter & Gambles, they would pay at the highest that rate for federal tax purposes. But the small businesses are going the other way. They may be paying at a 40 or 43% tax rate on their income in the future.
Yes, right, because currently the highest marginal tax rate for individual is 35%, the same for a corporation. And under the law that starts January 1st, their highest marginal rate for regular tax purposes can be 39.6%. And then, as you mentioned, when you add on the Medicare surtaxes, you're up close to 44% just for federal tax. And then in Ohio, it's even worse, because large corporations, like the ones you mentioned earlier, they don't pay any Ohio income tax. But once again, small businesses don't get that luxury, and they pay as much as 6% in Ohio income tax.
Well, you know, I've really thought about this, and it's occurred to me that must be because small businesses don't create jobs.
But that's very contrary to what everyone is saying. Everyone talks about small businesses being the backbone of the economy, the job creators, and how everyone wants to help small businesses. But nobody's talking about this issue, that what's really happening is they're raising the rates on small businesses. So, for example, if a bank requires a small business person to keep a certain amount of capital in their company, they still have been profitable. They have to pay tax on that. They haven't gotten to use it personally, but yet they're paying taxes at a much higher rate in many cases than some of our largest corporations. There's just something wrong with that.
Ultimately, for the small businesses out there, depending on what legislation is finally passed, they may want to rethink how they're taxed. They may want to consider converting to a C corporation if these tax rates play out the way they're talking about it.
I think smart business people can figure out how to deal with whatever cards they're dealt if they just know the rules of the game.
And unfortunately, we may not know these rules until after they're actually effective.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. We're delighted today to have as our guest Mike Burrows. Mike is the founder and president of the Mortgage House of America. And Mike, you are one of the highest average loan size in terms of mortgage brokers in the whole region. What do you rank that success to?
Crystal, I've been successful not just because I've been in this a long time, 47 years, now I'm bragging, but because I've serviced good people who talk about me. And then I'm able to turn it over to many of my employees who can run with the ball. And if you're happy when you're finished, then you talk about me.
So what's the number one question that you get, Mike, when people call you?
They want to know what my interest rate is. What's your rate? And the analogy I try to use is you'd have to take my watch to a jeweler to find out what it's worth. So a bank wants to know what your credit's like. They want to know what your equity in your home. They want to know your income. So when people ask me that, I say, well, if I can ask you a few questions and get a big picture, maybe I can give you a quote. But that is the number one. What's your rate?
Well, Mike, you mentioned earlier you've been doing this for a long time, over 40 years. Did you ever think that you would see rates as low as they are now?
No, it's I hope what we can do here this afternoon is to spur some people into action, not just to call me, but to call their loan servicer. Mm-hmm. There is lots of opportunities out there, and you've got to get all your opportunities on the table to make your best decision.
But, you know, it's a topic that's on everybody's
well,
mind,
it is.
Right? With the elections being over now, I think a lot of people just don't know what where rates are going to go. What do you think?
I had a boss one time that looked me in the eye and said, they're going to change.
You got all the right answers, Mike.
And well, it was proven to be correct, I'll bet.
It's absolutely correct. But naturally, we all fear. And that's why in all the refi markets I've been through, 86, 93, 98, to 2008, to 2010, and this year, all those refi markets, people just keep refiing and refiing to take advantage of whatever it is they're trying to accomplish. As Tom just said, I've never seen rates this low.
Well, when should someone know to go to a mortgage broker versus just directly to a bank?
I think the advantage of a mortgage broker is that I'm able to assess the customer and then pick the right bank the first time. If a customer goes through their servicer, the Yellow Pages or whatever, not all banks want whatever you have to offer. So the key to my success is making sure that I assess the customer properly, and then I pick the right bank the first time.
But there are a lot of different products that people have to choose from, and one size doesn't fit all.
No, it doesn't. And that's why I think a mortgage broker can assess whatever the situation is for that client. And you know, we all have some skeletons in our closet, and you need to get them out and assess them. And if you don't have any skeletons, well, congratulations. The products that are out there that are most popular today is my 15-year fixed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2.5%.
Unbelievable.
$500 to close, and that's it. But you got to qualify.
That's the key. You have to qualify.
Yeah. And there are lots of programs.
If folks would like to find you, reach you, learn about what they can take advantage of, what's your contact information?
513 is the area code, and then it's 235-6970.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mike Burrows. Mike is the president and founder of Mortgage House of America. And Mike, you help people with mortgage loans, with refinancing. The other day in the mail, I got this letter that said the bank that had our mortgage loan was selling it to, I don't remember now if it was Fannie Mae or one of those initial entities. What's the deal with that? That's pretty common, isn't it?
It is today. The gorillas of the market is what we call Fannie Mae, which was created in the Great Depression. And the purpose of Fannie Mae, and it's an acronym that stood for the Federal National Mortgage Association. And all the money was in Wall Street and New York, and they wanted to figure out a way how they could get the money to transfer throughout the country so there could be some economic growth. So Fannie Mae was created. Originally, it was a government agency. Then it went on the New York Stock Exchange. If you don't know, today, it's basically owned by the United States government. It's in receivership. They've done a lot of good. They've made some mistakes along the way. In 1969, Freddie Mac was created by the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, and they are like a sister. But they're gorillas because they service and have purchased by issuing securities in Wall Street. They raise this money and then lend it out to the people that we serve. And those securities are backed by the individual mortgages. And those agencies have now over $1 trillion of loans that they're servicing. Probably 8 out of 10 loans in America are owned by Freddie or Fannie.
Do they really need to know? I mean, is it really something that people need to pay attention to?
You're absolutely right. They don't need to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is all paper that's traded between the banks and Freddie and Fannie, or as far as it goes, any other investor that wants to buy the individual's loan. And it is pretty unbelievable, but it's a double-edged sword, meaning if you got all your eggs in one basket, when the agencies get into trouble, then we have what we call the Dodd-Frank law that was passed. And where it affected us locally, Western Southern, one of our largest insurance companies in America, had a bank. And because of Dodd-Frank, they closed it. Allstate Bank did the same thing. They closed the bank. Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, same thing. More regulations, they can't put up with it, so they just closed the bank.
I've heard you mention before that your most popular product is your 15-year fixed rate. What are some other products out there, and when should someone choose a 15-year fixed instead of maybe an adjustable rate mortgage and ARM?
I don't want to get too technical, but Freddie and Fannie will only buy what we call a conforming loan up to $417,000. Beyond that, we call those jumbo loans. So if you're into a jumbo loan category, Freddie and Fannie won't buy your loan. The bank or some other investor standing behind the bank would actually buy the loan. But prior to 2008, there were probably 35 different products out there. Today, it's basically fixed 10, 15, 30, 20, 25. It's basically an adjustable rate mortgage. So it's fixed 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever. Balloons can be a 15-year fix with a 30-year payment plan, and you got to pay it back. There's still a few banks that'll do interest only. But boy, you got to have stellar credit, you got to have lots of equity, and you got to have lots of income.
Mike, if people would like more information about what they can do and should do to qualify for the best rate or to reach you, what's your contact information?
Well, again, I would have them call their loan servicer and then call me at area code 513-235-6970 because I want to make sure I can bring them value.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today our guest is Bob Coughlin. Bob is the founder and CEO of Paycor. And Bob, I know you have somewhere north of 23,000 customers. It seems like you're in a pretty good position to see what's going on in the economy these days. So What are you seeing?
We're seeing mid-market businesses pick up their employment, not quite the levels of 2006, 2007, but almost back to those levels. And so the companies that are 50 to 1,000 employees are hiring. Small businesses, we've seen a steady decline and then leveling off, but we haven't really seen it come back. And those would be companies 1 to 50 employees. And my theory on that, just talking to people, still has a lot to do with banking regulation and the tightening down of credit standards and small businesses' willingness to maybe stick their neck out and expand. We talk about uncertainty, things about healthcare regulation and that. I still think that the biggest issue is availability of capital and credit, easy availability of capital, like it was when I was getting going.
The small businesses, they don't have the oomph to get them going. They don't have that capital. They don't have what they need to really grow and expand. And people talk about small businesses being the backbone of the economy. As a society, we're not yet really taking steps and actions to help those folks get the credit that they need to expand.
I don't think I hear enough about reducing the amount of Dodd-Frank regulation on Main Street banks. We hear about Wall Street banks, but the Main Street banks, the ones who we deal with here in the Midwest, if they're being honest and talking to you, they'll tell you that they are getting a lot of scrutiny over the credit of every loan. They aren't really being given the freedom to make decisions without a lot of scrutiny. And it used to be when I was getting started, I went to three or four banks, and there was an element of a character in the loan, you know, the character loan they used to call it. That's pretty much gone from the system. And you need that a little bit with growing businesses. There's some risks that the banks have to decide they're going to take to some degree.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think they're criticized when they make those character loans because they can't document why they made that loan.
Well, you mentioned healthcare reform not playing a big part, but if you are a company who, if you're at 45 employees and you know that once you get over the 50 employee threshold that you're going to be subjected to potentially penalties and things like that, there's really not a lot of incentive to add those individuals as full-time employees.
I think I was just waiting what I think are the bigger issues. I think that's certainly an issue. And yesterday I was talking to somebody who actually said, I'm not sure I want to hire more people right now because I'm not sure what the effect of hiring people is, but it seems to me that the cost per person is only going up. Because in our company, interestingly, what we do is to try to automate a lot of things to make sure that we take that burden off of employers, but there's still a cost to the things that you're doing. So We need to get that cleared up.
You do take the burden off of employers, because here in our state, we have so many different municipalities, and for small businesses, even middle market businesses,
right,
who have to keep track of where their employees are and all the various payroll tax withholdings, I mean, it would be so cumbersome, and that's the service that you guys provide.
Well, it's payroll tax, it's wage and hour law, it's regulations when you hire somebody around verifications, and some of them are completely needed in the system, but it's the degree that you have to go to. Our business is actually expanding a lot because we're expanding the amount of types of things that we're helping clients with.
So if folks want to learn more about Paycor, get information about the company, the contact information.
www.paycor.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Bob Coughlin. Bob is the CEO and founder of Paycor, which is the largest payroll processing and HR function client service. How do you describe yourself?
Right. Well, today we're saying we provide technology software to help people employ people. It's really helping you manage people in a technology-enabled way.
Paycor has certainly taken a lot of action and initiatives to really evolve and use technology to make that less painful for not only your employees, but also your clients.
We rolled out a new platform in June. We call it Perform. And software programs, we provide software, used to be point-to-point solutions. So I'd have a solution for payroll. I'd have a solution for HR. I'd have a solution for time and attendance. I'd have a solution for tracking applicants, paying benefits, all those things. What clients want now is one system that's going to do everything they need to do to employ people, and they want their employees to have access. So it used to be we were only servicing the payroll and HR departments. Now more and more employee self-service is happening because companies don't want to have to do anything if an employee wants to change their withholdings, or if an employee needs to change an address or add a dependent or is going through a life change. So all that's being done for them online, and that leads to a whole host of other things.
Well, the key is to make it easier for your clients as well as easier for your employees, I would assume.
Absolutely. And that is another focus. If you think of software 10 or 15 years ago, you really had to go to training classes for 2 or 3 days. Now with folks who just have average knowledge of what we do, need to be able to use it in a strong way. So we have a whole department now that creates job aids and online focus and has a way to go in and do online help and people immediately. You have to think now about the user and the user personas, as is often talked about. You know, you have the administrator, you have the hourly employee, you have the high-tech worker, you have the remote worker, and they all expect to be able to access our systems and be able to use them effectively.
In this Perform software that you've developed recently, one of the key components is that users can actually make recommendations about what they like, what they don't like, and others can comment on that.
Right. So a standard website that everybody might go to now, like Facebook or whatever, people can vote on what they like and don't like. You can do that in our software now and see what other clients are asking for. And then our associates, development teams or whatever, will comment and put a scoring on their suggestion and let them know and follow up on what we're doing. And I think people like that they can actually collaborate and be part of our growth as a company.
For people listening today, I mean, it does sound like that you spend a lot of time in strategy and innovation. And sometimes I think employers and business owners and managers of businesses get so bogged down just dealing with the day-to-day that they don't think about other ways to improve or be more efficient or be innovative.
A couple years ago, I was thinking about a few things, and actually my wife was going to Target. She calls it Target. I said, "You don't go to Kmart anymore." And she goes, "No, Target's just a lot nicer." And I said, "Well, don't they kind of sell the same stuff?" And she's like, "Yeah, but it's such a better experience." And so we started thinking about that in our own company about software, and we started with software designers when we wrote our Perform platform. So it's much more like a user experience that you would experience with any software you'd go online with, as opposed to accounting or HR type software. Our company now has surrounded itself with user groups and teams that are constantly giving feedback, and obviously you have to set up infrastructures to do something with it, because it's frustrating if you make suggestions and they don't get handled.
So if someone listening today would like to learn more about Paycor, experience Perform, and other aspects of your business, what's your contact information?
www.paycor.com. They'll find all of our contact information, and they can talk to a person as well as go to the website.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is John Hawkins. John is the president and the CEO of Pathfinders and Management Performance International. And John, in your experience in dealing with companies across the region, how are organizations dealing with the changing demographic internally at employees' age?
And of course, it varies by organization. There's no silver bullet that every company gets right all the time. But the types of things that we see are twofold. A part of the tension, if you will, that's emerging in the marketplace today and in the workforce is as the millennials and the Generation X population starts to now engage with baby boomers in a meaningful way for the very first time. And when I say meaningful way, I mean as it relates to promotion and advancement and succession planning. Because it's not uncommon today to find Gen X's or millennials who might be moving into roles of greater responsibility and a baby boomer is reporting to them. So those cultures are clashing. Some organizations are doing a pretty good job, I believe, preparing their organizations for that inevitable shift. Some aren't. One of the things that we have seen in many of our clients is as that conflict arises, it can lead to everything from union organizing efforts as people express their dissatisfaction with the way that they're being engaged and treated in the workforce.
Well, how can a company know when they need to start taking a closer look at that when this issue is on the horizon?
A number of tools that companies have available to them, of which we offer some, of course, from employee engagement surveys, climate surveys, supervisory surveys, there are a number of vehicles that are available, in fact, which are designed to better understand the climate that organizations are facing so they can then be more proactive and get ahead of the curve as it relates to some of this potential conflict.
And, you know, after they do the surveys and they realize they have issues or at least concerns, what's the next step? Do they just try to teach each group how to relate to each other?
I believe that companies sometimes are too often to spend money on training before they really have a clear strategy and what it is that they're trying to achieve. So what we advise is once we've done, for example, a climate survey and we understand the issues and we've looked at the data, let's take a step back and ensure that we have a robust strategy and a clear path for what we want the climate of the culture of the company to be. Then, of course, from there, training is always a vehicle that can help to bring that to life. But sometimes executive coaching, one-on-one coaching is a better vehicle, especially if you're dealing with someone that may be in the baby boomer generation and you know, that's a better vehicle for them to embrace the information.
Do you find, as a part of working with companies, that some of the most successful ones are where they actually engage the employees to be part of the conversation as opposed to just assume that because you're offering training, people are going to get it?
I think you just touched on what I believe is one of the most critical dynamics facing business and industry today, because we're all in that baby boomer kind of an age range. And as we were growing up in business and industry, there was a certain covenant that existed between companies and their employees. There was a closer relationship. We believed that, you know, the company was going to be there for us. Well, those relationships have been broken for many, many years, starting with the outsourcing to consistent layoffs and downsizings and things of that sort. And as a result, many companies haven't done a very good job of engaging their employees, and that's where some of the risk comes into play. We believe a very, very effective employee engagement strategy can help you to overcome some of these challenges.
And John, if folks listening today would like to learn more, get more information, contact you, what's your website?
Well, we can be reached at managementperformance.com. We have a sister organization called Pathfinder that focuses on sales and marketing strategy, and we can be reached there at pathfinderconsulting.net.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, a column that we recently wrote in the Enquirer talked about how people can minimize using credit card debt and certainly not having credit card debt hangover come January when they get their bills in the mail. You know, last year, the Federal Reserve Board estimated that shoppers racked up more than $851 billion just in December. That's just amazing.
In credit card debt.
Unbelievable. So the key to not having a big credit card hangover in January is to develop a plan. And I know that it's very difficult to stick to that plan, stick to the budget, because you go into a store, you just see something, an impulse purchase, your emotions get in the way of making a good decision, and you just buy it.
If you don't have a plan and a budget, you are going to end up making impulse decisions, taking advantage of a sale, spending more than you should be spending, and you may very well end up with credit card debt, which is usually the most expensive debt that you can have.
The best plan is to develop a budget, develop a list, everyone that you're going to shop for, have a set dollar limit, and before you go out into the stores, which is where most people still tend to buy Christmas gifts, go online and look at the comparison between one store versus the other. You know, the other thing I love to suggest to people this time of year is get your children involved. This is a great way to teach children financial education by allowing them to do some comparison shopping and really let their dollar be stretched much further.
Well, they can learn a lot if they have a limit on what they're allowed to buy. Then they're really able to discern whether they really want something or they want to buy a gift for someone.
And I know this seems old-fashioned, but really take advantage of layaway. That's the old concept of using real cash to pay for your purchase instead of actually charging it on a credit card.
Well, it's like a credit card in reverse, right? You pay for it before you get it rather than getting it and charging it on a credit card and paying for it over the following months.
It still is a great way in certain circumstances to take advantage of really making sure that you don't go into debt. The other thing is if you are going to use a credit card, which it does make sense in certain cases, the key is just not to buy more on that credit card than you can pay off when you get the bill next month. The other thing is limit your use to maybe one card, and certainly the one with the lowest rate if you do have to carry a balance.
Well, and you got to be careful how you use your credit card. The other day I got a phone call from American Express asking me if I was in Illinois.
And you promptly came into my office to see if I was still sitting in my desk.
Right, and I wasn't. I was in Cincinnati at my office, but somebody was in Illinois trying to make a charge on my American Express card.
Well, you bring up a great point because through the holidays, fraud becomes much more common. You know, people are able to rationalize why it's okay to steal a credit card or charge something on a credit card that's not theirs because they want to provide gifts for their family. So you have to be very alert to that, and you can't wait until the credit card bill arrives. If you have the opportunity to look online just to monitor your charges from time to time, it's very important to do that.
Well, it's important from a fraud standpoint. It's also important from a budgeting standpoint because if you do lose track of how much you're spending, generally you can go online and see what your credit card purchases have been, or you can keep track as you go.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.